That's the sound of the big one in the Bird of the Year competition. Hoi ho, the yellow-eyed penguin. And so this week in the visit to the sound archives of Ngātahinga Sound and Vision, Sarah Johnston is going to take a listen to archived recordings about our black and white feathered friends. Are they feathered, Sarah? I suppose they are.
Well, I guess they are. Someone will tell us, yeah. No doubt, if they're not, but I think they are.
Yeah, okay.
So yeah, I was inspired by good old Hoi Ho's win to see what is our oldest penguin recording in the sound archives. And it turns out we have some that were recorded way back in 1947.
Great.
Yeah, sadly for them, they were recorded on board a United States icebreaker heading away from Antarctica, taking them off to go and live in zoos in America.
Oh, that is sad.
Yeah, it is sad. And there's some photos of them on we've put up on your webpage, all packed into little crates and things. So they were recorded on board this ship when it docked in Wellington. The radio station went down there and talked to the crew. So here are some penguins from 1947 and the American penguin expert, unnamed, who had picked them up.
Perhaps you can hear some of their noises back there. Those are the small rockhopper penguins that we picked up in the Antipodes Islands. We only have two of the typical Antarctic penguins, the Empress, which is quite a noble bird. They probably weigh about 50 pounds apiece. They're quite tame now. I've had them about a month and usually feed them with fish, which they take very readily. But the smaller penguins, that is the rockhoppers and the golden-crested, I've only had a little over a week, and they haven't gotten quite used to me yet. They've been chewing more on my hands than they have on fish. I have to force small pieces of fish down their throat every day, and it's quite a chore, really.
Those emperors are quite tall. About how much would they weigh?
I would say they're about 36 inches tall and probably weigh as much as 50 pounds.
How much is that?
Well, that was an emperor trumpeting. I don't know just what they mean, except that he sees a bucket here and thinks he's going to be fed again.
The small ones, do they make the same type of trumpeting noise as the
No, the little ones don't make that noise. They make kind of a squawk. They sound like maybe a bunch of irate chickens. They're quite ferocious and fight among themselves quite a bit, but perhaps when they get used to each other, they will get along a little better.
Do they go in families, or did you just pick them up separately?
These were primarily picked up in family groups. I believe that I have a pair of emperors here, but no one can tell for sure.
And how many of the smaller ones have you got?
I have 40 of the small ones.
40?
I hope that we can get them back alive, or the greater part of them back to Washington, to the National Zoo. We have three of these emperors in the Washington Zoo at the present time, which we keep in an air-conditioned glass-enclosed cage. And up to the present time, we've had no eggs. But maybe I have all lady penguins, and maybe these are gentlemen penguins. We can get some eggs after this trip.
I hope so too. Thank you very much indeed.
You're probably welcome.
Gee, that's a great little clip, Sarah. Thank you. That's penguins heading for zoos in the US in 1947, and they didn't seem to know much about those penguins, Sarah, but they were happy to have them.
It seemed very random. Just, you know, turn up in Antarctica, grab a few random penguins, don't know if they're male or female, and pack them off.
Bit so different back then, I suppose.
It was, as our next clip will also illustrate, unfortunately, as if being picked up and carted off to a US zoo wasn't bad enough. For many decades, penguins were on the menu for Antarctic expeditions. So this is an excerpt from an interview with a man we've heard from before, because he's got some amazing tales to tell. His name's Tom Clissold. He was living in Napier in 1960. He was fairly elderly by then. But back when he was a lad of 22, he was the youngest member of Captain Robert Falcon Scott's legendary expedition to Antarctica in 1913. So he was injured in a fall while he was down there, and so he was not part of the team that made, you know, that dash to the pole, and they all perished in the snow. So here he is being interviewed. He was the cook, which will give you some idea of where we're heading with this.
It was understood with the conversations that I had with Captain Scott that we would try to not use too much tin stuff and meat that we'd taken down, but we would live on seal meat, skewer.
Skewer?
Skewer gull.
Yes.
I'm just trying to think of the dash it all, little fellas, the
the penguins?
Penguin, skewer, and seal meat. To me, it tastes like nothing on earth, but I couldn't tell you that. but after they were prepared, they didn't taste like that, you must understand. That was the idea of preparing them, because nobody would eat them otherwise. You would make them up into galatines and a loaf, seal loaf, and curried, and stewed and things like that. That's something I couldn't even recognise it myself sometimes. And penguin, of course, is just like eating a, I suppose, a very, very tough wild swan, I suppose. But the flesh, of course, is black. But he lays wonderful eggs, you know. You get a quantity of eggs from him. These eggs are like an oversized plover's egg. When you boil them, they're transparent and about the size of a big duck egg, with all the beautiful flavour. And we used to live on those in the summertime. You can get as many as you want, you know. They won't go away from you. I mean, you just walk up to a penguin and he comes up to shake hands with you, as it were.
Yikes, you haven't lived till you've had a boiled penguin's egg, eh?
No, poor things. So yeah, that's
soft poached, yeah.
Scott
of the Antarctic's cook, Tom Clissold, recalling several ways of serving penguin meat which he cooked during that expedition in the early 1900s.
Yes, and so happily, things have improved for penguins a bit since then. We've become a bit more environmentally conscious and, you know, don't eat our wildlife quite so much. So back to the hoiho yellow-eyed penguins. As people probably know, they are southern birds and live off mainly the Otago coast or Banks Peninsula. But in 1989, a lone hoiho kept turning up in Wellington Harbour, and he became quite a little celebrity in the news. He was very attached to humans, and wildlife officers had to make several attempts to rehome him. He was nicknamed Solo. So here he is on Morning Report.
Solo was first found at Wellington's ferry terminal, and after a rest and a good feed at the city zoo, he was flown to Christchurch to reunite him with a colony of birds living off Banks Peninsula. But within weeks, the marathon swimmer waded up onto Wellington shores once again. Conservation Department spokesman Jim Kitson says that posed a bit of a problem.
Since then, we've been pondering what we can possibly do with him. We did consider a release on the Wellington or wider upper coast, but Solo is so friendly that there is a real danger that he may emerge on a populated Wellington beach and maybe taken by a dog or something like that. In order to give him a chance to get him back into the wild, we are going to attempt to get him back to a spot where there is a group of other yellow eyes. To give him, you know, every opportunity to join up with his fellows again. One thing that may help us is that they've just found another yellow-eyed penguin on a beach at Kakanui, south of Oamaru. This bird was covered in oil, and our people down there, conservation people, are taking this bird to Muraki as well. They'll put them in proximity of one another, and this may help Solo to establish a bit of a bond with his own kind.
Conservation Officer Jim Kidson on Morning Report in 1989 about Solo, the hoiho who kept popping up in Wellington Harbour.
And so finally today, I thought we'd look at some international attention that hoiho got. This is celebrity British naturalist David Bellamy, who people will remember was very popular. He had TV series in the 80s and 90s. He came out here to open a reserve set up by the Yellow-Eyed Penguin Trust in 1993. And here he is being interviewed about efforts to save the hoiho.
Sarah, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
It does have immense problems, of course, because it's one of these solitary penguins who actually used to like to come ashore and nest in moderate privacy in amongst the trees of coastal forest. All that coastal forest is gone, and what the Yellow-Eyed Penguin Trust have been doing is building sort of penguin mating and nesting booths by putting in native flax, and now they're actually restoring the native forest. But of course we then have mustelids down here, stoats and weasels, which were introduced from Europe. And you see your penguin devolved not knowing about nasty mammals that chewed them and chewed their babies up. And so a large program in getting rid of the predators has to go on. So it's a continuing fight. And please may I say thank you to all the supporters, all the members of the Yellow-Eyed Penguin Trust for their support and keep in there. We haven't won yet.
That's the distinctive voice of David Bellamy talking about moves to protect the hoiho, or yellow-eyed penguin, in 1993. 26 years on, there is still lots of work to be done. You can check out yellow-eyedpenguin.org if you want to find out more. And I just heard from someone who sounds like an expert who says that hoihoa aren't only on the mainland. In fact, the species stronghold are Auckland and Campbell Islands. They actually went extinct on mainland New Zealand, but the birds from the sub-Antarctic have colonised New Zealand. Thanks, Graham. Good to hear from you.